You're listening to DraftKings Network.
All right, everybody, Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Well, we left our homes up in Bristol Bay for the waters of Miami shore. With a hippo at the helm and our severance pay, we fly the pirate flag once more. Pirate radio with the ship and crew. We got wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. For the pirate radio.
Kevin Love is going to join us a little bit later in the show. And also, we have finally found the correct job for Mike Schur at Meadowlark Media. We didn't know exactly what we were going to do with him, but now we know he will be joining us later. But this is a slot every Thursday for David Sampson. Nothing Personal is the name of his podcast. I don't believe there's another executive anywhere in the audio or media sphere from sports talking the way that he does about sports. So you should check out Nothing Personal with David Sampson. Let's start with Tony La Russa, David. The idea that this old man clinging on to past unwritten rules, a man who is a Hall of Famer, a man who is a legendary genius who often gets the title of guy who invented baseball, guy who acts in managing like he invented baseball. He goes against his own team. I don't know if you want to set up the particulars, but what did you make of the entire stupidity of the White Sox clubhouse, a very good team, supporting their own guy, the players, as their manager rails against the idea that he's swinging at 3-0 pitches and hitting home runs and blowouts?
So the us versus them is supposed to be the clubhouse versus the front office. That's something that I had to fight for 18 years, and I would try to fight it by trying to be congenial and spend time in the clubhouse, not too much time, not too little time, make sure I was there. I would actually go in more after losses than after wins, because most people in the front office only go in to celebrate wins. So I would try to be around when the team would lose, trying to communicate with players in a way that made all of the GMs we had and the owner and all the managers unhappy, because I would talk to the players about things that were real, when they were going to be traded, how much money we had to sign them. I would really try to be communicative, shockingly. I would tell them the truth and they wouldn't like to hear it often. But the us versus them mentality is one of the biggest issues that exists in sports, and there's no way around it. But the key to the us versus them is the them has to be people that don't wear a uniform by definition. Trainers wear their own kind of uniform and they're stuck in sort of a purgatory because players know that they answer to the front office and they also deal with players. But managers, no matter what, have to be on the side of their players, publicly, privately, in every way. Tony La Russa is in violation of so many different rules for the sole reason that he's unwilling to do anything but double down on a mistake, something that I used to do early in my career, where when I did something wrong, I would do a second thing wrong in order to make the first thing seem less wrong. I do the third thing even more wrong in order for people to forget about the second thing I did wrong. La Russa has thrown all that out the window and decided to call out his own players to the point that he's got a veteran pitcher, Lance Lynn, telling him that he's got to ease up on the unwritten rules. And Tony La Russa's response was maybe the single worst response in history. You've got a locker. I've got an office. So STFU. He's got a problem there. And he's got protection. He's got like triple layer protection. The kind that's 99.9% sure it's going to work. You're going to be fine. Because Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, will never fire him. But Tony La Russa needs to learn that never say never. The pressure may become too big to bear. Tony La Russa may not make it through this, Dan.
He may be forced to step down because you're saying the ownership will never fire him. Is that a money thing? How did it even get put in place? Is this a reflection of the ownership?
They've got the best record in baseball, David. What do you mean he might not survive this?
If you lose your clubhouse and there's a mutiny on that particular bounty, and I don't mean a mutiny led by the people in the dinghy. I'm talking about the equivalent, Dan, if you came to work today and Jessica, the newest member of the, well, not any, by the way, there's so many new members of the shipping container, I can't keep track. I do keep a list in my room of all of the people you've brought in onto your pirate ship. And the list just keeps getting longer with some of the great people ever. So Jessica, congratulations. It's great that you're there. I, of course, am not a member of any container other than a used food container. But if you lose those players, you're done. And the owner is going to get told by the GM, who's Rick Hahn or the president of baseball operations, that we may have the best record now, but the players will shut down. The players will start ignoring their manager if they don't want that manager around. And at the end of the day, you can't get rid of all the players, so you have to get rid of the manager. But Reinsdorf is so stubborn as an octogenarian that it's going to take at least two more incidents before he would fire him. It's not about money, Mike. Not at all.
Okay, so it's not about money. So that answers my question. We'll circle back. I'll have another question soon, but why don't we get David Sampson's top five mutinies that he's ever experienced in baseball later in this hour.
Yes, that one's much harder. Top five, they'd have to all be, well, it wouldn't be Marlins mutinies. He might have gotten some Expos mutinies.
He might have been in ownership meetings in which he witnessed some mutinies. So we'll get his top five mutinies later.
Excellent. That is good work by you, Mike.
It's not good work. First of all, stop patting yourself on the back with what great work it is.
That was great work.
When you have someone on a show every week, I guess I should be used to the fact that you're going to want a top five list. And right now I'm thinking of the top five while delaying because I'm talking about how pissed I am that you keep doing this to me, yet I keep coming up with them.
You're also pissed, and it was not very well concealed, and this is happening with Amin El-Hassan, too, that they're not happy at other people being hired as they're not being hired, but they continue to produce content for us, and those other people less so. Like, this is a genuine tension we now have at Metalark Media, and the problem is Stu Gatz is taking all the money.
Yep.
Well, actually, Dan, you took all the money, and you just distributed it to someone like Stu, who just chimes in with a yep. So I'm not annoyed that I'm not on your ship because I want to make sure that all the holes are plugged before I'd ever join. And I feel like that it's taking on water. But for me, I love being with you every week. But these top fives, man, top five mutinies. All right, I can do that for you.
All right, do it. You know how incredibly hard it is, that yup, to work in such small windows? Give me some credit, man.
I think you're overstating it, really.
Yep.
Do you know that you're not live right now, Stu?
Yep.
You just say yep, and they put it in. Mike presses the board, and it just says yep.
Yep.
David, I watched a mid-90s action movie that really changed the game, the general aesthetic, the original score, everything. I'm talking about an underappreciated classic, called Speed, starring Keanu Reeves, Dennis Hopper, and Sandra Bullock. This movie is amazing. There was a writer also by the name of Mike Ryan that did a whole write-up on, it's on HBO Max now, and I fell into this, and every scene in this movie, from the beginning with the elevator, to the stories and the character development, to the bit characters that you end up hating because they're so stupid and selfish, this movie is perfect. Do you agree?
David, he annoyed his wife so much last night because he was saying all the lines in the movie before the people said the movie line.
Yeah, well, I'm taller.
Yep.
Yep. Classic.
That is not David Sampson's kind of movie. Speed is not the...
That, actually, you're wrong. I loved Speed because I enjoyed Sandra Bullock. I enjoyed Jeff Daniels. That was around the time of Dumb and Dumber. And what I was loving was his range. Jeff Daniels, or Jessica's looking, we're on Zoom right now, but you can't see that. Are you looking askance at me because you can't believe that I'm actually on the show? Or are you wondering whether Jeff Daniels was actually in Speed?
No, I'm looking at the Speed Wikipedia page to figure out how old this movie is and wondering why people over a certain age only reference movies from like the mid-90s. Like, there's never any movie reference that doesn't go over my head when I'm talking to people of a certain generation.
Is this
God, the, it's really good to meet you, Jessica.
Is this
I feel
a millennial?
So old and so invaluable.
No,
geriatric millennials.
It is unbelievable. So Speed, you don't have any idea what we're talking about on Speed. This is going to be a new genre because it's making fun of Chris Cody and Billy for not knowing the movies we're talking about, which is just making fun of us for always referencing old movies. But now Speed makes Mike Ryan old. Speed, a movie that, again, he knows he can do it right now. Yeah. He can sit there and do the whole movie, everyone's dialogue.
Jess, if I may, we keep harkening back to the action movies of the mid-90s because they flatly just don't make them like they used to. John Wick is a throwback, and it, you have to keep using the stars from those ages because they're the best action stars. That's why Mission Impossible still has legs. That's why we're retrotting Top Gun. That's why Nicolas Cage is still out here doing it. That's why the John Wick franchise is so massive. It's because action stars were just better back then, Jess.
I've seen John Wick, though. That movie is from this millennium. I just haven't seen Speed. It came out the year I was born. I'm just not interested in watching movies where the actual stunts...
I'm done. See you later.
Like, the stunt drivers had to actually, like, die to perform these scenes because they couldn't do anything digitally. I'm just not interested.
Oh, practical effects are the best. And a quick note on the stunt drivers in this film, because... The direction of this film is sometimes spotty because there is a man that looks like Bruce, our old sound engineer here, that is wearing Sandra Bullock's wig at one point.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, when they go on the on-ramp.
Wait a minute. I need to hear more. Jess, can you just read from this Wikipedia? Because I love that thick, meaty Bruce is just wearing a wig and is a stunt double. But are you telling me, Jessica, that Speed had a lot of death associated with it in real life news that I don't know about?
I don't know if that's actually true. I might have exaggerated, but it just like Mike said about the practical effects. Like, I grew up used to a certain amount of, I don't know what you call
CGI,
special effects, CGI. Like the first movie I remember seeing with a lot of CGI was Lord of the Rings. And so anything that is like beneath that threshold, I just find it unwatchable. I can't go back and do it.
You can't watch Speed? Okay. I'm hurt by this.
All right. Look, I think we've covered that ground. We're old guys, but let us actually revel in it. Let's talk about this film because the synopsis, if you're not familiar, is there's this bomber out there that is carrying a vendetta because his elevator ransom situation did not go well. Jack and Harry, who I like to think, see, Jeff Daniels is playing a character named Harry. And spoiler alert, something happens to Harry here. But in a fan fiction recreation in my mind, I feel like he survives that incident and actually just forgets all about his history and moves to Rhode Island and then goes on the road with Lloyd Christmas in Dumb and Dumber. So then as a plot of revenge, because he's a former cop and he's just pissed off about how he was treated and he's lost a finger, a thumb, he puts a bomb on a bus.
Yeah.
Well, he puts several bombs on another bus because I forgot about the first bus that blows up. But... it's a game of cat and mouse, classic game of cat and mouse, Jess. The bus, once it goes over 55 miles per hour, triggers a bomb on the bus. Yep. From then on, the bus cannot go below 50 miles per hour. Otherwise, it'll blow up.
That's right.
If you try to evacuate passengers on the bus, guess what?
Yep.
It'll blow up.
That's why it's called speed.
Yeah, so you have to maintain a certain...
speed.
Yeah. That's right. Even Chris Cody gets it.
What a great premise.
In a bus, through Los Angeles, I'm pretty sure. And yes, Billy.
Jess, imagine Speed 2 cruise control, but on a bus.
Oh, I hate Speed 2. No,
Speed 2 cruise control was the third worst movie sequel of all time. I think Jason Patrick may have been in that, but I could be wrong. It was so bad. It was not as bad as Fletch 2. And Jessica, thank you for that hyperbole. People in your generation love hyperbole, right? Except we can check it now. That's the problem. If you're going to read something and then say something, it now you can't be as full of it as people like Dan is.
Never stop me.
You're right. Hyperbole is a part of my speech. Same with saying the word literally. Like, I literally cannot watch Speed. I literally could watch Speed, but I literally will not watch Speed. Okay. That's just how we talk. Okay. I'm sorry.
Very good. You're not that sorry. You're proud. And she will now, this is very exciting, she will now continually wave this flag of ignorance all over here. And it'll make us feel fossilized, because if she hasn't seen Speed, Stugatz, as Keanu Reeves, if she only knows Keanu Reeves as John Wick, your favorite, Point Break, no chance.
Jess, tell me you saw Point Break.
You've had to see it. No way. Jess, you saw it.
Okay.
No?
All right. So I think recently this Academy Awards, the second woman, only the second woman ever in Academy Awards history, won Best Director. The first was Kathryn Bigelow for Zero Dark Thirty. She has an incredible career under her belt, but the best movie she ever directed was Point Break, starring Keanu Reeves. And
Samson
Patrick
disagrees. Samson.
Why is David, why are you giving us the Mutombo finger? What's
because
happening?
Because it was the Hurt Locker.
No, it was.
No, but she also wasn't. Did she also do Zero Dark Thirty? Damn it.
You just said won the Oscar for, and the answer is the Hurt Locker.
Thank you for
Zero Dark 30.
That's a big fine. I'm actually going to pay $2. Jeremy Renner, Hurt Locker, Zero Dark Thirty was a different movie entirely. I'm sorry, LeBron just went crazy and he did Zero Dark Thirty things last night.
Why are you wagging the Mutombo finger again, David?
Because Stu was. I was only wagging it to say that's. I have to correct Mikey.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's just LeBron on the mind for Zero Dark Thirty. I'm sorry, but you have to watch Point Break. It's a ridiculous movie, but incredibly quotable. It's a top three movie of all time in my mind, in my personal record book. What? Wait, whoa, David, come on.
David just spit something up.
Mike, there's no scenario David's going to like a movie like that. You and I love it. It's number one for me. There's no scenario. Yeah, but he's not going to like Point
Break. Number one? I thought Tango and Cash was your number one.
I recently readjusted my top five, where I have Point Break number one. Tango and Cash slipped to number three for the first time in my rankings. Crazy.
I've got Fight Club. I've got Point Break. And then I've got Face Off. That's a holy trinity for me.
Of what?
Of my favorite movies of all time. And flatly, the best movies of all time.
They're not terrible. I love Point Break. I didn't like the remake. Wow. Jessica may have seen the remake of Point Break.
No one saw
that. Have you heard of the remake?
No one saw the remake. I mean,
I've seen 0 points break. None.
Okay.
The first one came out 3 years before I was born. It's older
Why
than my
do you
older
keep using
sister.
That, though? Why is that like the threshold for you? Life didn't exist before you were born?
No, because this is how I feel about it. Like, I think certain movies, when they come out, they have like a 10-year window where they're on AMC all the time, or like TNT or all the movie channels, and people talk about them a lot, and then it kind of fizzles out. So if you're under a certain age, by the time that movie's cultural capital fizzles out, you just aren't going to hear about it or watch it. Like, no one that I went to school with growing up was ever like, have you guys seen Point Break? Like, people my age have seen the Titanic, because that came out when I was a little bit older. I was like 5 when that came out.
Good flip.
But Point Break or whatever, Speed, like, no one saw that when I was 5 years old.
It's Titanic. It's not the Titanic. It's just Titanic.
Okay, David. There's no need to get indignant about
he's right.
He's checking us, and I'm fine with it. But David, can you get to your review of Speed? I want to hear it.
I have a child.
I was at the edge of my seat the entire time. I've probably seen Speed 15 times because it stays as exciting as ever. And I have a thing for Dennis Hopper. It's a natural thing because of the roles he's played in the different movies he's played. And I'm sure that, Jessica, one day you and I can watch Easy Rider together. which is a movie you've definitely heard of. Definitely is a classic that still, as you would say, has cultural capital, which is a C square that I never heard of
Guillermo,
before.
Put it on the poll, please. Do you have a thing for Dennis Hopper? Yes or no? Go ahead, David, continue.
So an action movie that has Sandra Bullock driving a bus, it's a concept no one had ever heard of, that you could have a vehicle, an entire movie based on a bus. And here's a little known fact about Speed. There's a movie called Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which is a movie with Matthew Broderick that you may or may not have heard of that I think still has cultural
capital.
Why
are you shaking your head, Jessica? Because you don't know what this is either, correct?
No, Ferris Bueller's Day Off took place in Chicago. I grew up in Chicago. There are certain movies that go beyond the 10-year window, and I think Ferris Bueller's Day Off is one of them. Same with Caddyshack. I said on Stupidity last week, Caddyshack is my favorite movie. There are certain movies that fit that billing, especially comedies, I think. But Speed, unfortunately, to me and to my peer group, probably not.
Well, you're
but
in luck.
If you have loyalty, then Alan Ruck is in Speed.
Yeah. Do you know who Alan Ruck is?
No, why would she know who Alan Ruck is?
She just said she knows who Ferris Bueller is.
Is this segment all going to be, I think we should just make it, we berate Jessica about movies that she hasn't heard about and then explain them to her. Because all of these movies have, like, go ahead and explain the plot of Point Break to Jessica.
Oh,
to
God. Thank you.
One of the great heist movies of all time.
Several heists happen in this. Okay, so there is this rogue group of bank robbers called the ex-presidents. They're called that because when they go into banks and hold them up, they're wearing masks of former presidents. All the presidents that are featured were presidents before you were born, but it's a historical fact, so don't write them off.
It was Reagan, it was Carter, it was Nixon, just so we're clear.
Yeah, okay. And there's a funny moment there where the guy dresses Nixon, holds up two fingers after he robs a bank and goes, I'm not a crook. Yeah, so it's great.
But he is a crook.
That's why it's funny. There is this hotshot new FBI agent called Johnny Utah, who played in the Rose Bowl, was a great Ohio State quarterback till his knee got bent 90 degrees in the opposite direction.
Right.
He latches on to this grizzled old veteran at the FBI force. This is going to go on. If you just keep hitting 30 on your podcast, I'm going to be talking till tomorrow. All right. So Pappas is played by Gary Busey. And this is when Gary Busey was still kind of respected, but this was the beginning of the end for Gary.
He's laughing.
I saw Gary Busey still kind of respected in a helicopter shooting into one of the Lethal Weapon homes the other day. Just shouted at my television, Busey, back when he was normal.
I don't think there was ever a time where Busey was normal, but he had people fooled. Anyways, Pappas is this grizzled old FBI agent, and he has a kooky theory. The ex-presidents, Stugatz, are
surfers.
Yes. So what do you do to catch this ragtag group of bank-robbing surfers? You must become one yourself. And Johnny Utah learns how to surf. And the people that actually teach him how to surf end up being the ex-presidents, led...
Whoa, spoiler alert.
...by Bodie. Right. Bodie is played by Patrick Swayze, who absolutely knocks it out the park in this role. And his hair is godlike.
It's his best role ever. He also left out the fact that Johnny Utah falls in love with Bodie's ex-girlfriend.
Played by the brilliant Lori Petty, who was on a bit of a run here in the early 90s. Now, it doesn't stop there. You think the adrenaline rush is just surfing?
You are
out of your goddamn mind, because we jump out of planes without parachutes in this
one. That's right.
Great practical effects, an incredible chase scene in which Johnny Utah hurts his bad knee, the best beach football scene I think I've ever seen in my entire life. There's a moment where Johnny Utah has Bodie clear in his sights, and he can't shoot him because of everything that Bodie has taught him. So what does he do? He unloads a clip into the sky and just goes, ah! A great cameo by Anthony Kiedis, whose line of dialogue is, that would be a waste of time. Tom Sizemore is pissed off because he's living with these guys that everyone thought was the ex-presidents, but they weren't the ex-presidents. And then there was an unclaimed piece of meat in the southern border that was actually a guy that would help the ex-presidents. Bottom line is, Johnny Utah is the worst cop ever. So many people die because he just couldn't bring himself to arrest his best friend. But then this all culminates in Australia, where Johnny apparently has jurisdiction, and there's a 50-year storm, and then the classic line, Vaya con Dios, is uttered. You got to see it.
All right. Thank you for all of your contributions there, Mike. Sampson, your third of the top three worst sequels. Is The Godfather, the third Godfather in there?
Yeah, that's what it is. Godfather Part 3, Fletch Part 2, and Speed Part 2. Those are my top three.
Do you have your top five mutinies ready?
Oh, I've got plenty of mutinies, but I just want to wake up Jessica first because she doesn't need to see Speed anymore.
Yes.
She needs some speed to get through the rest of this show, though.
I guess we brought her up to
Speed. I did not follow a single word of Point Break.
You didn't listen to it.
The president. I heard Ronald Reagan.
It's all right. There is this hot shot agent called John Utah. He latches on to this old vet in the FBI force. It's considered a coup. His name is Pappas. He loves meatball subs. Anytime he goes to get one, he goes, "Hey, Utah, give me two. Give me two." Oh, man.
All right.
Those meatball subs look delicious.
Incredible. So good that they got the perfect spot to catch the bank robbers, but Utah's too busy getting two.
Who is your favorite of the ex-presidents besides Bodie? For me, it's Roach. Roachy.
Yeah. Is Roach the one that tries to jump off the plane but dies by the time he lands?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Bodie was so banged up over that death. Yeah.
All right, everybody, Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes, to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Top five David Sampson mutinies. I don't know how many are with the Expos, how many are with the Marlins, or how many of them are just generic baseball stories. Number five, Sampson.
Hold on, I need two more minutes. I'm finishing up Tank Girl. I had enough time during that synopsis from Mike to watch Tank Girl. So give me a minute. Okay, number five. Here we go. There was a mutiny that took place when there was an employee named Mike who worked for the Marlins. And I wanted him to be let go because I thought that he was not being a proper employee. And I was told by Jeffrey that it wasn't going to happen. So Larry and I, the GM at the time, walked into his office and we said, here's how this is going to work. We're about to resign. Here's the choice. If you don't let us fire him, both of us are resigning. We were both in the middle of long-term contracts. And he actually gave it a thought and then gave the approval, but said, you've got to get on a plane and do it in person. So I had to fly to Pittsburgh just to land and in the airport, have him meet me at the airport under a false pretense, fire him, get back on a plane and fly back. So the mutiny was that we were going to walk out the door if we weren't allowed to make this firing. Of course, he got the last laugh because we had to rehire him years later, but that was a mutiny.
Can you tell us why it is that he had to be fired? Or
the same reason why everybody has to get fired when they're doing their job in a way that is not beneficial to the company, when they're doing things that, in your opinion, as the president of the company, will lead to a problem with the chain of command.
Why'd you rehire?
Because I was much later in my career and I started giving fewer shits.
Number four, David.
There was a mutiny during an owner's meeting, which does not happen very often. The commissioner is sort of in charge of owner's meetings. And a mutiny takes place when certain owners get together and try to form a coalition. Because in baseball, you need a coalition of 8 out of 30 to block anything. And a mutiny was taking place when we were trying to elect a new commissioner when Bud was retiring. And Jerry Reinsdorf led that mutiny to make sure that a owner of the Red Sox, his name is Tom Werner, who's still an owner, by the way, an owner of Liverpool, he was the backup choice to be commissioner. He was running to be commissioner along with someone named Tim Brosnan. Tim Brosnan had been eliminated already, and it was down to Manfred versus Werner. And Jerry Reinsdorf was trying to lead a mutiny against Manford. And it was a fascinating owners meeting that took place in Baltimore. It did not work, but it was not for lack of trying.
Why didn't it work? I thought the owners could just, Reinsdorf didn't have enough of them on his side.
He couldn't get to eight. He really needed the Washington Nationals as his eighth team to block Manford. And we cut a deal with the owners of the Nationals as it related to Masson and their fight with the Orioles, which was taking place at that time, which is still taking place. And there were some commitments made to how that would go down. And the Nationals therefore changed their vote. They left Reinsdorf's camp and they went with the majority, and that's how the vote took place. Now, history will tell you that Rob Manfred was voted 30-0 to be commissioner, but that's a lie. What happened is the vote was 23-7, which makes you commissioner. But once he won, then John Henry, who was also not voting for Rob Manfred, said, I want to do a revote now that we lost because I want to look as though we are all on the same page. Let's do a revote and see what happens and announce the results of this revote. The revote was 30-0 because it was over, and it was announced publicly that Rob Manfred won 30-0, which is not true.
Fascinating for a number of reasons. Explain to me the nature of that cut deal and how often that one happens, because that is a valuable voting tool to have. So that's a big deal. I've not heard any of that before.
No, I haven't really talked about it much, and it doesn't get reported. The deals that go on that happen as it relates to many things with the collective bargaining agreement, many things that happen with MLB has central money that is national broadcast money, like from your former network. And they give money to baseball, but that money goes into a big pot. And the commissioner is in charge of that pot, but has to distribute it equally to the 30 teams. That's the rule. But he can withhold money whenever he wants, but he can't do unequal distributions. So the way they get more money to certain teams is they invented something called the discretionary fund. The discretionary fund is money that the commissioner has that he can give to whoever he wants. You have to apply for it. And he would use it, Selig and Manfred, they use it as a way to get votes for certain other initiatives they want. They will make sure that you get some discretionary money more than you asked for. If you get wronged, let's say, or if they need you to be on a different side of an issue, they will use money in that way. Those kind of deals are happening at all times. Don't kid yourself.
I mean, is that business or just bribes? Like, what is that? That you're, I understand it's a discretionary fund, but what you're saying is that power can simply be bought as a cash transaction in baseball.
Oh my God, that's true? You're right. It's the only time that happens. It's only baseball that happens. That never happens anywhere else.
I don't hear about it, David. Like, how often do you hear about something like this? Because I'm sitting here reacting. I'm not naive. Like, you might think I am about business, and to some degree, perhaps I am. But these are not things I have heard publicly. The idea that Manfred got to be commissioner because of some sort of side deal bribe. Like, that's not something I've read about.
You say bribe. I say business.
Number three.
Well said.
There was something that happened when we were putting Marlins Park together, and the mutiny happened because I was trying to get to a vote of 9 commissioners to get the public money for Marlins Park. And when you meet with commissioners to get money for a stadium, commissioners are people who vote. You have them in wherever you live. They're like city council or county commissioners. And yes, I was investigated, and no, I was never found to have done anything because I didn't do anything, because it's not a bribe. It is a mutiny. The mutiny is when someone says to you, you have to explain how this vote would benefit my constituents. And what they mean by that is, how will this vote benefit me and enable me to get reelected? And so there were a bunch of commissioners, and I had to carry around a list of demands of commissioners. And one day I went into the office of the county manager, and I said, I can't deal with this anymore. These people are all out of their minds in Miami. I can't keep track of what everyone wants. This person wants us to make sure we work with unions. This person wants to make sure we take care of the parks department. This person wants to make sure that we have enough minority and women-owned businesses to do things. It was everyone had their list of demands that had to do with their constituencies. And the mutiny was that I said, we're going to walk away from this deal, If we get one more request, one more, whether it's a reasonable request or not, we're done. And it required separate meetings with each of the commissioners to say, you've gone too far now. If you're a yes vote, you're a yes vote for what the deal is, and that's the end. And that's how we eventually got to a vote in March of 09. But it was very close to the end of baseball, and I had to do the mutiny. I had to.
Can we hit pause on your countdown real quick? Because I'm looking at Billy's hat in the Zoom, and I haven't seen the Marlins get a positive reaction for something off the field. Well, I guess it's technically on the field because they wear it. The City Edition uniforms are flat out gorgeous. That's one of the greatest uniforms I've ever seen in baseball. This has to be a merchandise rush, the likes of which they've never seen over there, David.
I love those uniforms. And the story, I think that we didn't do enough. We have something at Marlins Park, what is it?
The Lone.
The Lone. At the Lone, it's called the Bobby Maduro Entrance. And does everyone, Jessica, do you know who Bobby Maduro is?
Oh, come on, man. What are you doing?
Knock it off.
Bobby Maduro. Actually, wait a minute. You laughed, Jessica, but didn't you write a story about the old Miami Stadium baseball spring training that the Orioles used to use? Didn't you do one of those?
No, she did Miami Marine Stadium. That's a fine.
Yeah, $5.
Yeah. Bobby Maduro is a Miami baseball classic. He's right up there with Red Berry.
Okay, Jessica, we'll move on.
$5, by
no
the way.
Comment.
Wow, nothing for Red Berry. I thought I at least made Billy smile.
This is a good joke.
Are Maduros like sweet plantains?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yes, they are. But okay. You are absolutely
named
right.
After him.
They are not named after. They are not named after Bobby Maduro. That is untrue.
Berries are actually named after Red Berry.
Is this old black and white photo man the person you're asking if I know?
Wow, that looks like
sweet plantains.
Looks good there.
It's the biggest insult of all time. She just said that is Bobby Maduro the plantain
guy? She's so right. It's not a big insult. To who? To who? To Maduros? No, it ain't to Bobby Maduro the insult. Get out of here. Number two.
Sorry. Okay. Yes. Number two is the mutiny that took place when we sat down. Mutinies have to be, obviously, with people of power who are above you in the chain. That's what a mutiny is by definition, when the crew does a mutiny against the captain. So number five was a mutiny we did against the owner. Number two is as well. We had an issue with his dealing with agents where he was cutting deals with agents on the side and not telling us about it. And we went into his office. By this time, it was a different GM. And we went in and said, you are no longer allowed to talk to Scott Boras. And we said, the reason you can't talk to Scott Boras is every time you talk to Scott Boras, we end up signing a player for way too much money, whether it's, forget Wei and Chen, it could be someone on a different scale, like a Dustin McGowan or anybody else, who is not a Boras client, by the way, but that's another example of a player signed who we didn't want to sign. So we said, you are no longer allowed. And we went one step better. We called Scott and said, just so you know, you will no longer be able to speak with Jeffrey. And Scott's response was, and I remember it like it was yesterday, because the way you did phone calls with Scott is you put it on speaker. And there were a bunch of us in the room because you never could let anyone go one-on-one with Boras because you would never get a straight answer as to what took place. We put him on speaker and he would just talk for minutes and minutes. And we would just talk about other stuff. We'd put him on mute and do other business because he wouldn't wait for you to say, uh-huh, yes, okay. You couldn't interject because he doesn't take a breath. And so he was talking about the fact that that's not how he operates and that he only operates by speaking with owners, and he would not accept, were his words, I do not accept your premise that I may not speak to your owner because your owner knows the difference between winning and losing. That's his big line. That's how he gets owners to do what they want. So the mutiny was you may no longer ever speak to Scott Boras, and it worked for an extremely short period of time. One off season, actually.
How did it work and how did it end? Like, I know you do not have, you don't rip anybody the way that you rip that particular guy. And it sounds to me like one of the things in play here is that you were sort of totally helpless against a shark who was very aggressive, who continually upended your business and logic and reason by just placating the ego of your owner. And so basically your owner would take, like La Russa, would take the side of the agent over the people he hired to run his business.
That's exactly right. And that's not a good, that it ended with the fifth year for Chen. That is the last deal.
That ending.
And that's the off season, the off season where he wrestled it away from you. And that was the worst, one of the worst signings in Marlins history.
It's got to be probably the worst signing because he was so bad from the beginning. But at the time we signed him, remember, he was a great pitcher for Baltimore. When we signed him, even you guys were complimentary of the signing. You agreed that 5 years may be too long. But pairing him with Jose back then was not a bad signing. He just didn't perform. But the fifth year is what really hurt because Jeter ended up having to release him, which is one of the great stories of all time. When Jeter and Gary Denbo did not listen to Mike Hill and they released Wei-Yin Chen during a COVID situation, which had not yet been fully developed. There wasn't a guarantee that the season would be stopped. But by releasing a player, you have to pay him his full salary. So, little known fact, Wei-Yin Chen was the highest paid player in baseball in 2020 in actual dollars received by the player because he got all $22 million not prorated because he was released while the season was still going to be 162.
The delight that David told telling that story, like, this management team threw away $22 million because they couldn't predict the pandemic.
Well, I didn't say predict the pandemic. Forget it. Whatever, Jessica. Okay, number one.
What did I do?
Number one, David. You didn't know what Point Break was. You didn't know what Speed was. I mean, I'm honestly thinking about firing you.
You've done enough is the answer. You've done enough.
Do you want a little bit more ammo, Dan? Here's something that I will die on this hill. The Replacements is a terrible movie.
You talking about, like,
fire her.
Right now.
Fire her immediately.
Old Keanu Reeves. Like, look, I love The Matrix, love John Wick. I love Keanu Reeves, but some of his older movies are trash. The Replacements is the least deserving of praise of all of the shitty football movies. It's terrible.
I'll back her up.
I'm with her.
But you can't, there is at least sing along in the
prison. Is this Shane Falco
Shane Falco.
There's no consensus.
Jailhouse dance scene?
Yeah. Yes. He was hiding behind the jukebox, wasn't he?
It's so bad. None of it makes any sense. Also, like, the premise is that they're all scabs, and that's not something that people, I think, really want to relate to. Also, it's just, like, extremely sexist. The women in that movie are just a complete stereotype. It's just a trash movie. I hated it. Chick Stick Scars is so lame. I will not watch it again.
She is so right about this.
Excellent point.
But the kicker was smoking a heater.
That's right.
Exactly, the kicker would smoke cigarettes while kicking, though. I mean, she's right about everything she said, but again, the kicker was smoking a cigarette when he kicked.
She can't be right about everything she said. The Replacements is not worthy of that type of ire. You may not like it, and I'm okay with that, but to make your point when you're reviewing movies, and I learned this from Adnan, who has a full office on the ship and a full room and a big berth down below. I learned that you have to be very smart and careful when you're describing movies because you have to leave yourself room. So you're calling The Replacements so sexist and so this. You think that's the worst of the sexist old movies or the worst of the football movies? Come on.
David, your management, you wouldn't understand.
No. She wins.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you so much for being here. David Sampson is the worst thing to be, an old white executive who cannot defend the things that he's saying. If she says The Replacements is number one sexist movie of all time, you eat it, white privilege. Eat it.
Jessica, we've just started our relationship, and I appreciate it, but there's one thing I don't do well. I don't eat it well.
Number one.
I just don't.
Number one, the mutiny of all time for David Sampson. Number one.
It's personal. The number one mutiny was about you, and it will go down in history because it's still talked about, and it's talked about not just at the team level. It's talked about at the league level, and the reason why is that it is so important for baseball that their executives come off a certain way, like the No Fun League. It's so important that there is a stereotype for executives. I'm not talking about diversity or equity or inclusion. I'm talking about how you engage with media. And it wasn't just Jeffrey. And here's the part of the story that I've never told. It wasn't just Jeffrey who was angry with you, who did not want me to be a part of you or your orbit. It wasn't just our head of communications. It was also within the communications department at Major League Baseball. And the reason I've never told it before is those guys are still there. And there's still a possibility that Meadowlark and everything you're doing, you're going to try to do stuff with baseball and have interviews. And the whole interview with Rob Manfred was a major moment in the sort of evolution of the relationship with you. And the mutiny was that I tried to explain to the commissioner at the time, which was Selig, and to the new commissioner, Rob, that the power you have, and this is all about your roar versus reach, and that having you interview him, having you as an outlet to communicate to a group of people who they want to be the audience of MLB, but who are not, that you are the perfect conduit, and they would not buy it. They wouldn't understand it. And I put myself out there and said, I will put my reputation as a longtime president on the line. I will put everything on the line to say that Le Batard will help you more than he hurts you. And then you did the Manfred interview. I got a call from Manfred after the interview saying that I and you may be two of the biggest CSs of all time.
CSs? He used that
corporate
word.
Corporate shills.
Yeah.
Corporate shills.
Mm-hmm.
We are the biggest corporate shills of all time. He hated you. He thought, I mean, it was terrible.
Well, how did you get dragged into all of that, though?
Because I was talking to Rob at all times about PR. I had given him, when he was running for commissioner, that I had worked on a first 100 days, what you should be doing. I was a part of helping him with the vote, trying to cut the deal with Ted Lerner, trying to distract Jerry Reinsdorf, all of those things. And one of the things that he needed to do as commissioner was to be more relatable. And when you are with you, when a person is with you, you become greater than you are when you're not with you. That is the benefit of being in your orbit. But many people don't get it. And what you guys say is those people don't get the show, and you say it as a joke, but it's sort of a serious thing. There's a lot of people who don't get the show.
Have you ever wondered if Chet Holmgren might be a descendant of Abraham Lincoln, or if a UFC fighter could beat an alien in a fight? You might have not, and that's okay. I probably have thought about the UFC one, to be honest. But Shea Serrano and Jason Concepcion from the Six Trophies podcast have. If you love basketball, and more importantly, if you love fun, you got to listen to Six Trophies, where Jason and Shea serve up the biggest moments from all around the NBA with their brand of unbridled joy, banter, and pop culture side quests. Each week, they hand out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities. Stuff like the Denzel Washington and Training Day trophy, given out to the player or team having the best week around the NBA. Or the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy for the team or player that just can't get it together. Plus a bunch more trophies for all the good, bad, or just plain head scratching moments from all around the NBA. This playoff season, you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
I don't understand, though. You're telling me that the greatest mutiny of your career involves the idea that the commissioner came on here and did the worst interview in the history of sports public commissioner interviews, and we argued, and he was on the wrong side of facts, and ESPN is a baseball partner. And I didn't realize it caused all of that. I knew I was getting some of the blowback where I felt somebody reported that he had called somewhere and complained about us, but I didn't know it was like this. I didn't know that it reached the level where they're still stomping around about it. And as it relates to you, you didn't have anything to do with any of that.
But what if I did?
But what do you mean? If they thought
that you
did?
What if I was a part of having that interview happen? What if I was a part of helping with questions and answers? What if I had been a part of everything that had gone on? I'm just speculating. What if that had happened? What if I put my reputation on the line and said, here's what you should do. Here's how it should go down. Here's how to answer some of these questions. Here's how to ask some of these questions. What if I'd been a part of that, Dan?
Okay. Did they accuse you of that?
Yes.
And they dragged you into all of that. They dragged you into the orchestration of you made the interview happen by convincing them that it would be good to humanize Manfred. And you armed me with the questions and you told me everything that I needed to know so that I could interview him in a way that would embarrass him, so that you set him up through me.
I'm sorry, I was just finishing Tank Girl. What was that?
What is the movie that you're reviewing this week?
Yep.
A couple of CSs cutting it up.
I watched a four-part documentary. I finished it yesterday. It was called This is a Robbery, the World's Greatest Art Heist. And my Jeffrey, the owner, is an art dealer, and I grew up in the art world. And it's about a museum in Boston where there is a robbery in 1990. Art is crazy. The amount of money that paintings are worth is mind-boggling, as a matter of fact. And this is a four-part series about an art heist that's never been solved from 1990, where hundreds of millions of dollars of art was stolen, including a great Rembrandt, like one of the most famous Rembrandts of all time, Christ in the Sea of Galilee, among others. And the four-part documentary is so perfect. And it's not being reviewed well because people are misunderstanding what it's about. It's not just about the fact that this art heist happened. It's about who would have done it and what happens with art that is stolen and why people steal art. They don't steal art because they so badly want to live with a Manet or a Degas or a Vermeer or a Rembrandt. They steal it so they can negotiate with the feds when they're in trouble for their mafia activities and they can get reduced sentences. It's used as currency. And it's something that very few people know about. And now they do because of this documentary. The art, fine art, is currency in a very, very ugly underbelly of our country and our society and our world. And if you have 4 hours to spare, it is a great 4 hours that will teach you a lot.
I think some of the bad reviews, though, and you're talking about the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum heist, which has been unsolved, like you said, for decades. I think some of the bad reviews are because people want to know where it went, and the documentary doesn't tell you who did it. It gives you all these, like, you know, rabbit holes that you can go down. People want to know who did it.
They don't know. That's the whole point. They don't know who did it. It's an unsolved heist.
It's very unsatisfying to not know who did it and to devote 4 hours to still not know who did it.
I'm sorry that people of your generation need to be satisfied with the conclusion, where sometimes the best books or the best movies, the conclusion is that there is no conclusion.
I love that Jessica wants the crime to be solved by the movie makers. It's not enough for them to cover the story. They also have to get her the answer, they have to solve one of life and America's great mysteries.
No, but you agree, a story needs to have an ending, right?
I think in the case of art... In the case of art, you can leave things slightly open-ended when the crime hasn't been solved.
Like, leave it to your imagination, Jessica, art. Yeah, Jessica, beauty in the eye of the beholder.
HBO Max actually had, I'm watching, what the hell was the name of the documentary? It was a guy, a real estate developer, The Jinx, or Jinx, a New York,
yes.
a real estate developer who, and spoiler alert, at the very end, without knowing that his microphone is on, after you've been watching the whole movie, gives you the ending Jessica wants. But that is so goddamn rare where the movie makers end up solving a crime.
Hey, good journalists, good documentary filmmakers, you got to find the rabbit holes that the police haven't gone down yet and solve the crime and break some news for me to be satisfied. The Jinx is the gold standard, Dan, that every other true crime story is trying to meet.
What is the one Patton Oswalt did as well? Because his late wife also helped with the solving of crimes. And really, murder has become entertainment in this country with the way that podcasts, these true crime podcasts work, where people are just consuming this stuff. And she was at the forefront, right? Patton Oswalt. Did you see that movie, David?
No. Is he the guy from Secret Life of Walter Mitty?
Patton Oswalt?
I have not seen that.
You know who Patton Oswalt is, David? And you're yelling at me for not knowing Alan Ruck?
That's just my voice. I wasn't yelling. I'm not a yeller, Jessica, at all.
She's right about that, though.
You see the small guy, like my size?
Yes.
That's him. He was in The Secret Life of Walter Mitty then.
No, that was John Travolta. Was it The Fan? He was a crazy Giants fan in a movie, Patton Oswalt.
He was?
He's in Veep. He plays the older father-in-law, I think.
Or he's a stand-up comedian. He's not, I mean,
everyone knows him.
He's an actor, but he's a stand-up comedian first. You don't know who Patton Oswalt is, David.
It's big fan. Big fan. Check it out because it's a serious movie with Patton Oswalt where he's just like this crazy sports radio caller and then right. He ends up just going nuts. It's like a serious Celtic Pride.
No, but David's right. He knows who he is. He is in The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, David. You're right.
So then, of course, then I do know who he is. And his wife, I think, died tragically. And they had a bunch of young kids. And he sort of stepped back a little bit.
Her name's Michelle McNamara. She wrote this very well-researched book about the Golden State Killer, who was at large for decades after murdering a bunch of people in San Francisco and Southern California. And she passed away, I think, before the book was published. And then HBO ended up making a documentary about her writing the book. And her research inevitably led to the capture of this famous serial killer. It's very astonishing, like, shocking work.
Golden State Killer. That's LeBron.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah. It was such a good joke if it hadn't been delivered quite so stiffly.
Whatever. I got it out there, Dano.
I've got a related question for all of this, and I'll ask it to Jess. Jess, pop quiz hotshot. Airport gunman. He's got a hostage.
Gun to your head.
He's using her for cover. He's almost to the plane. You're 100 feet away. What do you do?
What do you do?
Are you asking me a question?
Yeah, I'm asking you a question.
What are you talking about?
Pop quiz hotshot.
Yeah.
What?
Airport gunman has a hostage. He's using her for cover. He's almost to the plane. You're 100 feet away. What do you do? What do you do?
I don't know what movie you're referencing.
It's a question. It's a pop quiz. You're not. It's a pop quiz, Hotshot.
It's a pop. Let's go, Hotshot.
Yeah. What do you do?
You've had a big 2 weeks around the show here. You've had a breakout role. What do you do?
You do.
Good delivery, Mike.
Cry.
No. You shoot the hostage. You take her out of the equation.
Jesus.
You're fired.
All right, everybody, Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes, to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.